And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this has been a week of contrast between Joe Biden on the one hand and Trump and his forces on the other. Joe Biden had a pretty good week, and as far as I can see, this is one of the worst weeks for the Trumpists. But Biden's approval rating has gone up, and in fact, at least one important columnist wrote about Joe Biden, "Where's this guy been hiding?"
He hasn't been hiding anywhere. They keep writing that he's been hiding. You know, they've been writing since the campaign. He was hiding in his basement in Delaware, that he's hiding in the White House, that he's because he's demented. He's hiding, and he goes to Delaware every weekend and this sort of stuff. You know, and the press bought it. But in fact, what he's been doing is just doing what a president is supposed to be doing. He's grinding it out.
Well, I think in one respect, Trump did something that Biden has not done up until now, and I think an essential thing, and that is Trump is a political leader. Trump built a political movement. Trump continued to provide political leadership, odious political leadership, reactionary political leadership, very bad political leadership in terms of what he wanted to do, but political leadership. But the president is not mainly an administrator. He's not mainly a manager. He should be mainly a political leader. What Teddy Roosevelt called the bully pulpit ought to be the president's main weapon in normal times. So in that respect, I think it was right to criticize Biden. He wasn't doing that. He was doing what you said. He was trying to be a good administrator. He was trying to be a good manager. But that's the job of the leader of the Senate. That's the job that he used to have, maybe. That's not the current job. And he even said that about a year ago. He said, I have to stop thinking like a senator.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's been out there making speeches, but they're just not memorable speeches. And don't forget.
They don't pack punch. He didn't really attack the enemy.
Until this week.
And I think that makes the difference.
Yeah. But also, you have to remember, he's leading a normal political party. You know, we now have the term team normal. What Trump has had happen is that what used to be a normal political party has become abnormal, exceedingly abnormal. Now has the term team crazy, that the political leaders who we are told in private, many of whom despise Donald Trump, they refuse to do anything to challenge him or to set up a separate poll from him within that party. It was a small thing, but if you recall that Donald Trump he's been after Mitch McConnell, but he also went after Mitch McConnell's wife, who used to serve in the Trump administration. She resigned right after January 6th, if you recall. I mean, she was there to protect her family's shipping interests and business interests, Elaine Chao. But he went after
her. By the way, that was her second stint in the cabinet. She was the labor secretary for Bush.
Bush, yes. Trump went after her, pointing out some of those those issues about her family and things like that. And Mitch McConnell was asked if he had anything to say in his wife's defense, and he said no. That was the full extent of it, that one word.
Yeah.
Which was sort of like the Ted Cruz response, you know, when Trump went after Cruz's father and went after Cruz's wife's looks and things like that. That's the one thing that Trump did, is he sensed the moral weakness and the lack of spine in so many of these Republicans. Now, of course, on the other hand, Trump has also gone after Mitch McConnell himself. He demanded this past week or the last 2 weeks that the Republicans oust McConnell, and that isn't going to happen in any way, shape, or form. So he's taken on that that quest, whether he's, you know, Sancho Panza in that request or whether he's actually going to get something out of it, we'll have to see in the longer term. But McConnell also, don't forget, has come out in the last week or so and assessed the fact that he now does not see a great prospect for him becoming a majority leader after the November elections. And part of that is obviously due to the people that Trump has backed and are running for Senate in these primaries. Again, team crazies. We got Oz in Pennsylvania, who continues to mismanage his campaign.
Does he have a campaign?
Well, he's trying to. I've seen some new ads up there, but it's he really doesn't have control of the dialogue at this point. And you know,
but Trump is coming to campaign for him. Trump is going to try to bail him out.
Well, yeah, I think Trump wants more bailout Mastriano because he wants control of the elections in Pennsylvania. And then we have the Ohio situation with J.D. Vance. We have Arizona with Blake Masters. And
well, that's very interesting, right? I mean, Masters shut down his website. Masters seems to be changing his whole approach to the campaign.
Yeah, well, first, before we discuss that, I want to mention that Mitch McConnell's campaign arm pulled their ads for Masters. Now, whether it'll matter if Masters continues to be getting large amounts of money for Peter Thiel, we'll see.
Yeah, I think what Thiel gave him $10
million. Yeah, however, what you were talking about is over this abortion issue. And the big question after the Supreme Court decision was, is that in fact going to be a game changer for the Democrats? And the evidence increasingly is, yes, it is. How big, we don't know, but so far it's been fairly strong in different places. First of all, getting back to Arizona, they had that that vote on the ballot, and it got the, wasn't it Arizona? Or was it Kansas? I'm sorry.
No, Kansas, where they had a supreme a constitutional amendment.
Right. Deeply Republican Kansas. And it got beat by about 14 or 15 points.
Right. And then they insisted on a recount. And, of course, the recount showed that the first count was correct.
Yeah, within 100 points or something like that, 100 votes. And then, you know, the Republicans are contemplating doing something like that in Pennsylvania, putting that question on the ballot. I'm going to wonder whether they're going to actually try to do that, whether they want that on the ballot to in Pennsylvania because of the votes of women. There are reports that of new registrants, the majority are women, and the majority of those women are registering as Democrats, which would reverse the trend that we've been talking about, where registration has been trending towards the Republicans in Pennsylvania. You know, you mentioned with Biden, he's been knocked down on at least two issues. One was the Afghan pullout, which was to have it, you know, to be polite about it, was a bloody mess. And that was the point where we saw his popularity dip and dip precipitously. And that was just a year ago. We just celebrated the 1 year anniversary. And then the second thing was the economy, not so much the fact that we've created a lot of jobs and a lot of other good things in the economy, but the inflation rate. And all of a sudden, this week, we're starting to get indications that the inflation rate is starting to slow. The prices of things are coming down in many ways. If you remember, lumber was a big deal a year ago, and that's back to at least the levels it was, if not below those levels. And gasoline has been coming down fairly sharply. There's a gas station that I go by every day, and at one point it had been up to $5.19. And the last thing I saw there this week when I left work, I believe it was $4.05 or $4.09. And there are places that I've seen $3.99. I've seen threes now in gas stations in Pennsylvania.
Well,
so those trends are heading the Democrats' way, and
Well, one of the big things that Biden did this week, very important, was the cancellation of a portion of student loan debt.
Yes.
That apparently will benefit upwards of 41 million people. That's a lot of people.
Well, that's the thing. And, of course, we're getting this same back and forth as to whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. These is it inflationary or isn't it inflationary? The bigger picture, I think, is that, is whether or not those students whom benefit for it will vote in the midterms and the upcoming election, whether it's one of these issues that they will see as having been important for them, important enough to vote, or whether they'll say that was nice and just do what a lot of students have done in the past, is not vote. Although many of these people are no longer
these people
students.
Aren't students.
Yeah, they have.
These are adults. Some of them are ready to retire.
But we also see the split on how people look at the world. You know, we get people who have been saying, well, no one ever helped me out, so why should I help? Why should we help other people out? Which is a very Republican point of view. And there are other people saying, hey, if we can make life better for a lot of people, why shouldn't we? Just because we can't make it better for everybody doesn't mean we shouldn't make it better for some. And then you have, I was watching CNBC one day this week, and of course, they're one of the hosts there in the morning is very, very right-wing in his view. And he had one of the former members of the Council of Economic Advisors on and was challenging him on this, you know, type of thing. And the member of the Economic Advisors, you know, said, why are we picking winners and losers with the question? He said, well, we pick winners and losers all the time. We bailed out the banks. We bailed out Wall Street. We bailed out the auto industry. What are you talking about, picking winners and losers? And they've all benefited the country. And, the host didn't have a really response to that except change the subject to bring up another nasty point, you know?
Well, think about this. Education was always considered a social responsibility for two reasons. First of all, you have to hand down the culture of the nation. You do that through education. And secondly, you have to provide a workforce that is capable of doing what the economy requires to be done. That requires education.
Well, not only that, but people have to live and understand the world around them.
Yes, exactly. Right. That's exactly right. Now, that's not the same thing as buying Cheerios or Coca-Cola or an automobile. That's not a consumerist situation. You don't get an education. You don't buy an education as an individual act. From the viewpoint of society, society's young have to be educated and society's middle-aged have to be re-educated to keep up with the developments in science, technology, the economy in general. It's a social responsibility.
It's an investment in the progress of the country.
That's exactly right, in the life of the country. Now, the Republicans, and joined by the Democrats, you have to say, since the 1990s, transformed this social obligation into an individual consumer choice. So it's your responsibility to educate yourself. With what result? You've impoverished the students. They all have these gigantic loans, number one. Number two, it means a lot of people who could have become students don't become students. They can't afford it. They can't qualify for the loans, or they don't want to take on that burden. And finally, you end up with fewer educated people and worse educated people than you need. All of that. What they really should have done is say, yeah, this was a bad policy we've been doing for 40 years. It should have been reversed. Everybody who had to pay for this as an individual ought to be reimbursed. You paid off your loan. We should give you a tax credit or some way, give you back the money. You never should have put it up to begin with. Then you wouldn't have been able to say, well, I paid off my loan. Why? And you didn't. You know, you don't create that split among people. But if you're changing the policy, restore the damage that you did. You did damage to people. You took an individual, a social responsibility, and turned it into an individual desire, which it isn't. Well, I went to school for free. Yeah. I went to university for free. And not only me, tens of thousands of others who grew up in New York City as well.
Yeah. Well, let me, get back. We've talked about this. This is the libertarian, you're on your own. Everybody's on their own.
Yeah.
Type of philosophy. And and it's also somewhat short-sighted because as we found out with something like the GI Bill, when you invest in people, they get better jobs. They do better. And, of course, that generates more tax money. And the payback, it's not a one-on-one payback. It's a collective payback to society that more than pays for itself.
Absolutely.
And does things. You know, you talked about that you went to school for free. California higher education used to be free until Ronald Reagan got there. And this is also a phenomenon with the Republican Party, is that they really denigrate education. They don't want people to be educated, in particularly in areas that doesn't benefit them. They don't want people to be thinking and to be creative and things like that. They just want the people to buy what they're selling without any critical way of thinking about things.
Well, definitely they don't want you to learn how to think. That's for sure.
Yeah. And if there's one critique that I have of what Biden did, and there's different, you can argue there's different ways he could have done it perhaps better, and it could be kind of messy because they really don't have the mechanism set up. But I would have had him at the same time set up a parallel commission saying the cost of education is too damn high. Remember, we talked about
right. The
guy who ran on the rent part, the rents are too damn high.
Right.
Well, that's the problem. The initial problem is that it's too damn high.
Right.
And, we talked about this before. There's a guy out there at NYU, a professor of marketing, Scott Galloway, who's written about this, who says you can't continue to have colleges charging $70,000 a year when the average income is $50,000 or $60,000 a year for a family. You can't do that. It's a failed business model. And you've got to figure out ways to bring that down. And, of course, when you just pump money in the system, you say, we're going to give you money to apply to college, the colleges just keep raising the money, and you just fall far.
It's not like the professors who teach at the colleges get any of this money.
No.
Most of the people who teach at colleges are not tenured professors. They're adjuncts. They're part-timers. They don't have even the protections that you normally associate with professors. And most of them have to have two or three teaching jobs in two or three different schools.
Yeah, that's part of the what needs to be changed at colleges as well. You've got the people who are giving kids the education or teaching the education are the focus of things. We had this week last week the fact that the Nick Saban, the football coach at Alabama, is getting paid $93.5 million for the next 8 years. They're not paying their professors. The best professor at the University of Alabama ain't making anywhere near $11 million a year. Now we get the counter argument. Well, the football program brings in a lot of money that pays for a lot of professors, but that's, colleges are still supposed to be for education. They're not supposed to be the minor leagues of the football, of the National Football League.
That's right.
And you have to look at things a little differently. You know, talk about, your friend Tom Hartman talks about the summer jobs that he had in order to pay for his college and his schooling, and how cheap education really was. in those days, particularly.
But of course, you're dealing with a Republican Party that wants to abolish high school education and primary school education. They don't want public education. They right. want private education.
Private education, which, of course, drains money off, does the same thing that all these other things do. It drains money off the masses and concentrates it at the top, because that's where we'll pay the CEOs who run these private schools the big bucks. So a few people up to the top get a lot of money, and everybody else gets the short end of the stick.
Well, supposing they succeed, you know, it strikes me that if they succeed, it's their undoing. If everybody is kept out of the system, if the benefits of the system are prevented from flowing to the mass of the people, why should the mass of the people put up with capitalism? Why shouldn't they say the hell with it? This is not for us.
What's holding it together is this great big information infrastructure that we've talked about ad nauseum on there, and the support that it gets from the billionaires to maintain their billions.
Well, that can only go just so far. You know, once it gets really bad, it can't be maintained. Lincoln was right. You can't fool all of the people all of the time.
Yeah, but here's the problem. And again, we heard this week that this billionaire gave Leonard Leo $1.6 billion to set up this dark money infrastructure.
Now, Leonard Leo, he really gave him the $1.6 billion. He did it in a tricky way, so he didn't have to pay taxes on it. Nobody had to pay taxes on it, but he gave him $1.6 billion.
It's another travesty. And of course, Leonard Leo has been supported for years now by the right wing as he's worked his way through setting up the courts. And the courts, until we undo what these courts have done, you're not going to change things. And you can't undo that unless you get control of things so that the people who get nominated become the majority again, instead of the Kavanaughs and the Coney Barretts and the Gorsuches and things like that. But we're going to be what I fear is that any law that gets passed by the majority is going to get invalidated for some reason. They said, for instance, the student loan mechanism can get that Biden put in can get undone by the courts. They've already undone a number of other things that the Democrats have been able to push through for the benefit of the people. They almost undid the Affordable Care Act, and it was only John Roberts doing it with a backdoor way about the tax clause instead of the Commerce Clause that got upheld. There's still a lot of damage that can be done.
Well, that they're going to do more damage. You know that coming up is going to be the attack on the whole concept of affirmative action. That's coming up in the next year. Coming up in the next court term also is going to be the independent legislative doctrine. A completely phony idea from the viewpoint of American history, whose point is to make sure that the Republican legislatures can determine who should be anointed the winner of an election without regard to the actual counting of the vote. They're going to legalize that. You know that.
It looks that way. It looks that way. And that would be really a nail in the coffin of democracy. And people are starting to wake up to that, though, because in the polling, what's come out is instead of inflation as the number one issue, threats to democracy has become number one. Although, as someone pointed out this week, both sides see threats to democracy. They see the liberal side as being a threat, and the liberals see that the conservative side being a threat, or the right wing side, or whatever. It does seem to be.
But the argument is real simple. The right wingers openly say democracy doesn't work. We should not try to practice it. This country should not be a democracy. They say it openly.
Yeah, Mike Lee has said that. He's running in Utah. against an independent, because the Democrats don't have enough clout to win as a Democrat there. He's one of the ones that said, we're not a we're not a democracy. And of course, we know that the Peter Thiels of this world don't feel that way. And
They go further. They say we shouldn't be a democracy. Democracy is not the right way to go. Well, all right, it's not the right way to go, but you got to get rid of the Constitution.
They're working on that.
They're working on it. That's exactly right. They're working on it.
They're working on that. Yeah. They're working on that.
So the question is, and this is the current event as well, we had the raid on Mar-a-Lago, and it raises the question, should Trump be tried? And the New York Times writes an article saying, of course he should be tried. And lots of people say, of course he should be tried. Should he be? What do you think? Should he be tried?
Yeah, this is a debate. Charlie Sykes, you know, the conservative commentator from Wisconsin, who has abandoned the Republican Party over Trumpism, has published certain things on both sides of it. But, you know, like Mona Charon has come out and said, no, you don't, that the political cost is too great. But Sykes comes down and says, if we don't try him for this stuff, what would we try someone for? I mean, isn't this the real test? I mean, otherwise, what you have is a president that's essentially immune from anything and everything that he or she does. And that if it's a nation of laws and not men or women, then you have to try.
Well, I have a different attitude. My attitude is being tried is a political act, and you do it if you win, if you can win. And if you don't think you can win, you can't do it. He needs to be defeated politically. Whether he's tried or not is a criminal matter. What is important for the nation is that he should be defeated politically. And if the trial can't do that or doesn't help to do that, don't try him. You may not be strong enough to try him. Being tried is equivalent in this situation to the demand for unconditional surrender in a war. You can only have unconditional surrender when you've actually militarily laid waste to the other side and wiped them out. Trump has a real movement. They're not wiped out. That's the task, to wipe them out.
In support of your thing, he's been impeached twice and has emerged out of there not convicted.
Exactly.
And therefore, he's felt more brazen.
And his movement is stronger. So it would be a Pyrrhic victory if you tried him and convicted him and the movement wasn't defeated. Unfortunately, trying him is a quick thing, and you look at that and you say, well, we could get it done, and fantastic, wonderful. But the political defeat wouldn't be there. That takes longer. That takes winning over state legislatures. That takes winning over masses of people. That means policies and a kind of organizing that the Democrats haven't been doing for years, that they need to do, that anyway, the country requires. That's what's needed to defeat Trumpism, to defeat fascism. To throw one particular fascist in jail, that just could make his movement stronger. After all, they threw Hitler in jail.
Yeah, but they didn't throw him in jail after he ascended to power.
No, they didn't throw him in jail after he ascended to power. But they couldn't touch him until they defeated him in the war.
Yeah, and they never got to touch him, as it turned out.
And the ones that they did touch, they left lots, including lots of judges, lots of lawyers, lots of industrialists who were part of that machine, maintained their power, their influence, their position in West Germany after the war.
Or in Argentina.
But they didn't defeat them. They didn't defeat them, and their remnants are now ruling in Poland, ruling in Hungary, and coming to power in Italy, and in the United States are represented by Trump. So it's the political defeat that matters, not the juridical defeat.
That's why you got to get people to vote.
But you got to win people over. You got to give them a reason to
vote.
To vote, and you got to make them feel that it's their movement and they want to fight for it.
And we're getting back then to the abortion issue and the motivation issue and the
All kinds of issues. What we're getting back to is we're out of time.
We'll have to see it. We'll continue this next week.
We'll continue with most of our lives. Yeah. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.